ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
Here on ACT Radio, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about the environment, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Laura Oatman, who's the founder of Whole Earth Wellness. That's coming up a little later on the show, but first some news.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service took a significant step forward for cats and dogs by closing the internet sale loophole to the Animal Welfare Act. So what's the internet sale loophole? The Animal Welfare Act generally requires the cat, dog, and other pet breeders obtain a license, comply with minimum standards of animal care, and submit to occasional inspections to verify compliance with the law. However, the Animal Welfare Act exempts retail pet stores under the logic that purchasers can see the animal's living conditions firsthand, so inspections are unnecessary. Breeders take advantage of this exemption by selling pets online and claiming the website qualifies as a retail pet store. This leads to situations where there may be hundreds of dogs or other animals confined to tiny unsanitary cages and subpar breeding facilities with no oversight to ensure minimum standards of care. USDA's action now closes that loophole by requiring the purchaser's physical presence at the property before a breeder qualifies for the retail pet store exemption.
Kids are going back to school, and so is the ground beef filler named Pink Slime. Thousands of schools across the U.S. rushed last year to stop feeding their students meat that contained the ammonia-treated beef, known by industry as lean, finely textured beef. Their action followed a massive media uproar and a series of critical reports by ABC News. But new government data shows schools in seven states have since put aside concerns and resumed buying the controversial product. As of September 3rd, seven states have put in orders to the USDA for about 2 million pounds of beef that contains pink slime for the meals they will serve in the coming school year. Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Texas have done an about-face and put in orders for the ground beef with pink slime. Pink slime brings down the cost of ground beef by about 3%, which can add up quickly in a program that feeds more than 31 million school children each day. Pink slime, or as the industry prefers to call it, finely textured beef, is made from the remnant scraps of cattle carcasses that were once deemed too fatty to go into human food. The scraps are heated and centrifuged to reclaim bits of muscle, and then the product is treated with ammonium hydroxide to kill bacteria like Salmonella and E. coli before being mixed into ground beef. Currently, USDA allows these beef products to contain up to 15% lean, finely textured beef without any labeling requirements.
The Washington Times reports that a protective family dog sniffs out child-abusing babysitter. Police have arrested a child-abusing babysitter in Charleston, South Carolina, and one couple says it's their intuitive dog that helped sniff her out. After a background check came back clean, Benjamin and Hope Jordan hired 22-year-old Alexis Kahn to babysit their son Finn last year after they moved to Charleston. Mr. Jordan said that they felt like Alexis was a good fit at the time, and after about 5 months of her being the babysitter, they started to notice that she was very protective of their son. The dog was aggressive towards her, and a few times they actually had to physically restrain her. Growing suspicious, the parents hid an iPhone under the couch in their home and hit record. Mr. Jordan said of the recording, "It started with cussing. Then you hear slap noises, and his crying changes from a distress cry to a pain cry." Charleston City Police arrested Kahn a few weeks later, and she pleaded guilty to assault and battery in Charleston South County Circuit Court. She was ordered to serve 1 to 3 years in prison and will be placed on a child abuse registry. all thanks to a very intuitive dog.
A program of healthy eating, exercising, and stress reduction can not only reverse some diseases, it may actually slow down the aging process at the genetic level, researchers reported last week. The lifestyle changes affected the telomeres, the little caps on the end of the chromosomes that carry DNA. The report, based on research at the University of California, was published in Lancet Oncology. Men who switched to a vegan diet, added exercise and stress reduction, had longer telomeres, which are associated with longer lifespans. The men followed a program advocated by Dr. Dean Ornish, who has long researched the role of very low-fat vegetarian diets on improving health. Ornish, a professor of medicine at the University of California, worked with telomere expert Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, who won the 2009 Nobel Prize in Medicine. Their program includes eating a diet high in whole foods, fruits, vegetables, unrefined grains, and keeping the fat to 10% of calories. The average American gets more than a third of calories from fat. Dr. Ornish said, "We found that telomeres increased by 30% in just 3 months." 5 years after the program, the team took blood samples. The men who followed the Ornish plan had significantly longer telomeres 5 years later, on average 10% longer. The men who had not followed the program had shorter telomeres, 3% shorter on average. Dr. Ornish said the more people changed their lifestyles, the more they improved. Dr. Ornish's diet plan has been shown to reverse heart disease, diabetes, and may help keep early prostate cancer in check. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Laura Oatman, who's a certified health and nutrition counselor and founder of Whole Earth Wellness. Whole Earth Wellness is an educational alliance partner with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Stay with us. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Laura Oatman. Thanks for being with us today, Laura.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Laura, can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got involved in animal issues?
Well, gosh, you know, I think I've been an animal lover my entire life. Of course, for as long as I can remember, I've loved animals. But, you know, I was brainwashed to really never make that connection between eating meat and animals. It was like, you know, hot dogs weren't really made out of dogs,
yeah.
You know. And hamburgers aren't made out of ham. Buffalo wings aren't buffaloes. It's like they purposefully kind of confuse the names of food that's coming from animals with these strange, you know, acronyms that don't really make any sense. So, understandably, I was, you know, going along being a total animal lover and not seeing this disconnect between what I was eating and what was on my plate and the dog that was sitting in my lap and the cat that was sitting next to me on the couch. I never made that connection. So, I guess I became a vegan initially for purely superficial reasons. I wanted to lose weight. I saw this book called Skinny Bitch, you know, with this cute little cartoon lady on the front, and she's like posing and like a model. And I thought, wow, that's cool. The secrets of eating so you never have to worry about, you know, gaining weight ever again.
So, oh, yeah, well.
I thought, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And I read that book, and I was a vegan 2 hours later. And from there, it just became a cavalcade of changes in my life. I literally, you know, turned my life around, went a complete 180 in my career direction, just, you know, went completely different from what I was doing before. So,
Well, that's great. Did you have success in getting healthier?
Absolutely. After I became vegan in 2 hours, I was a 2 hour later vegan, I pretty quickly started to lose weight. And then at that point, after I started to lose this weight, then I had more energy. I was able to exercise. I went back to school through the Institute of Integrative Nutrition, learned how to become a health coach because I knew that the changes that were happening in me, not just physically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually, were something that I just wanted to share with everybody in the world. I didn't see why everybody wasn't following this path. So that's it really became a life changer for me.
Well, you know, would you say that most of your clients that you talk with are motivated by weight loss or health issues or what?
Both. You know, there are some that come to me for weight loss, and that seems to be the lowest hanging fruit. You know, unfortunately, if you advertise yourself as being a health coach because you're promoting animal rights, you're going to literally frighten away quite a few people. But if you say, hey, you want to lose 10 pounds, you've got, you know, 95% of the people are going to turn around and look at you and say, yeah, what's the secret? So it's really kind of like, it's like the Trojan horse approach. You know, you push the Trojan horse in, and then once they're in your office and once they start to make the changes in their diet, start to lose weight, start to feel better, you slowly but surely, you know, turn on the IV drip of where we're really going with this, which is much, much deeper than just weight loss. And once you get them there, then they're sealed. You know, the deal is sealed. Once they start to really see that it's not just about weight loss, it's really not even just about, you know, taking care of your heart or, you know, preventing cancer, diabetes, heart disease, on and on, all the physical reasons, they get locked in because of the mental, the emotional, and truly the spiritual reasons, the moral reasons at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think it's been my experience that most of the vegans I know got in it for one reason or another, and before long they realized the importance of the environmental reasons and mm-hmm. animal rights and health and et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The spiritual reasons mm-hmm. have become important for me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can't always lead with that. You got to kind of gently take them by the hand down that road to that point. And when they're ready, then they're ready. And so typically I'll work with people. I try and get them to commit to a six-month period of time with me because they say, whoever they is, but it's the big they, you know, they say that it takes about 6 months to really ingrain a new diet, a new lifestyle into your life and really make it a part of, you know, your typical day.
I thought you said you were a two-hour vegan.
Well, that's true. I'm full of strange things like that. But, yeah, that's, you know, for me, though, that 2 hours was like, it was like the straw that broke the camel's back. Everything just clicked into place and made total sense because it was so true for me. Everything that was touched on that in that book was so true. So, for me, it was 2 hours. For a lot of people, it takes 6 months.
I think it's hard because we all take for granted how much an effect food has on us. You know, when you're eating unhealthy and like you say, when, you know, people start to lose weight, their energy comes back, they become more active at work, they can take on things that they didn't take on before. And you know, it really starts with a simple thing as simple as food, but people mm-hmm. don't really think about it.
Yeah, yeah. It does start to all fall into place, but it starts with the food. The food is the foundation, really, and what we build on. So we always start with the food. We start with food and exercise. And then once that foundation is on its way and pretty well set, then we start to bring in the mental, you know, making sure that people are exercising their mind. Are they in a career that they like, or are they interested in something completely different? Why not start educating yourself down this other path if you're not happy where you are? You need to be mentally happy as well to be a fully, holistically healthy and happy person. So maybe you're in the wrong career. All of a sudden, you have this extra energy. You're researching things on the internet, you're going to the library, you're reading more about something that is really making you excited and passionate, and you find yourself going down a different career path sometimes. And then emotionally as well, you'll start to realize that, you know, you're emotionally eating, you're eating the wrong things at the wrong times because perhaps you're in a bad relationship or, you know, everything really, you're only as healthy as your weakest link in your whole self. So if you're locked into a bad relationship, you're going to eat bad food. If you're, you know, in a horrible career that you hate, you're going to eat bad food. So we start with locking down that physical you know, the food and the exercise, making that a solid foundation. And then we slowly start to peel back the onion and get to those deeper levels where maybe there's unhappiness or toxicity of some other part of their self. And once we get them all the way down there, then they are truly functioning in a holistically healthy and happy manner. So that's the goal.
You know, I've often heard that there are a lot of vegans and vegetarians that give up the lifestyle after a while, former vegans. And I don't really understand how somebody could do that, especially when you've adopted the philosophy.
Yeah.
But do you find that to be the case? Do you lose a lot of people?
No, I really don't. And I don't know. I must be so good at what I do.
That's it.
No, you know what it is? I think it's really about making vegan mainstream. It's about taking things that I think most people are afraid of becoming vegan because they think they're going to have to lose a lot of the stuff that they love, their traditions, their family dinners, their Super Bowl parties, their whatever it is that they just love about their life. A lot of people are locked into tradition. And so I think it's all about taking things that are ordinarily not seen as vegan and making them such. And it's incredibly easy. That's the thing. You know, it's not that difficult to have a vegan Super Bowl party. And I think it's just taking that word vegan and making it less scary and less threatening and more normal. And you've got to help people to see that that is the case. Because otherwise, they're going to, you know, they might dabble in it a little bit, but then they're thinking, it's too extreme, it's too scary. None of my friends are doing this. You know, being a vegan is easy. It's society that makes it so hard.
I think veganism has become a lot more mainstream in recent years with not only celebrities, but former presidents and others going vegan.
Mm-hmm.
And the availability of meat alternative products at mainstream supermarkets. I remember when I went vegetarian almost 40 years ago, hot dogs came in a can. And and that's about all you could get was hot dogs and hamburgers in a can.
Oh, my gosh.
And now there's such a plethora of choices you can make.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm really lucky living here in Southern California. We are, you know, nuts around here. And so we've got health food stores on every street corner. And we've got vegan, vegetarian, raw food restaurants all over the place, sprouting up more and more daily. So I'm really in sort of a hotbed of people becoming vegan here. And so I'm
as opposed to El Paso, Texas.
As opposed. Well, I don't know. You know, I've never been there. I only know that you guys have good hot sauce.
lots of that.
And spicy chili.
No, things are really changing here, too. There are several vegan-friendly restaurants and food products for vegans are available at mainstream supermarkets. It's growing. It's obvious.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, coffee shops and bakeries and
yeah. Oh, my gosh. My kids, my adult children live up in Northern California now. Talk about, oh, my gosh, they have a vegan bakery that makes nothing but vegan cinnamon rolls. Cinnamon. Can you imagine? I'd be in there every day. But they have vegan ice cream, you know, shops that are pure vegan ice cream. They have, you know, vegan bakeries. Oh, my gosh. I'd probably weigh 300 pounds if I moved up there, so it's probably better I stayed.
Yeah. I don't think that would fly in El Paso yet, but maybe someday.
It will. You know, I think it's interesting just thinking that Texas is a place that, you know, immediately popped into my mind. Oh, my gosh, are there really vegans in Texas? Because you just think of Texas as being a place where there's a lot of cowboys. And it's such a meat-focused culture,
Sure is. Yeah, but there are little islands of sanity scattered throughout the state.
Yeah.
And there's the Lone Star Vegetarian Network, and there's something coming up shortly in November? Yeah, the Lone Star Vegetarian Chili Cook-Off in Austin.
Yay! Oh, my gosh. I might have to come for that.
Oh, please do. Yeah,
I would.
That
I would love
it.
To.
You know, and this is sort of like being on the front lines. You know, you can sit back in your little ivory tower in vegan land, California, or you can be here in Texas.
You guys are truly the lotus in the swamp, as my Indian partner would say.
Lotus in the swamp. That's a nice image.
Well, that's what they say about the lotus flower, is because it is such this amazing, beautiful you know, oftentimes white flour growing in these horrible muddy swamps.
Uh-huh.
So you guys are the lotus in the swamp. I think you should use that as your tagline.
Yeah, that'll be the tagline for the radio show.
Oh, tell us a little bit about the work that you do with Whole Earth Wellness.
Yeah, oh, we do all sorts of fun stuff. Well, the backbone, I guess, the bread and butter of what I do is coaching, one-to-one coaching. So typically I will have someone, an individual that I'm working with, and we meet together for 6 months, as I said, every 2 weeks. And this can happen live, in person, in my office in Newport Beach, or I can work via Skype and telephone. We do individual transitions. We also do group transitions, all kinds of ways to work with an individual, one person at a time, to make that transition gradually, comfortably, with a lot of support, and yet to hold them accountable too, particularly if they're interested in, you know, losing weight. They come in and they step on the scale, and we make sure that they are, you know, actually progressing across those 6 months and meeting all of their goals. And, you know, a lot of them have different health goals. Most of them are interested in weight loss, but a lot of them also are interested in slowly weaning themselves off of prescription medication, antidepressants, high blood pressure medication, all sorts of things that, you know, people are kind of getting addicted to and hooked on by their doctors and really aren't necessary for eating a good, healthy diet. So, of course, working hand in hand with their doctor to make that transition and to make that change. And then on top of the coaching, we do seasonal cleanses, the first part of every season. Right now, in fact, we're in the middle of our fall cleanse. We do a live group, and then we also do an online group. So that's ongoing right now, our fall cleanse. Our next one will be in January. And then we do wellness retreats, which is really my favorite thing to do. We do typically two per year. We'll do local weekend retreats. Being here in California, we've got lots of great local venues, you know, going to a beach town or maybe up into the wine country. We'll do a wellness weekend. And we also do international week-long retreats, like to Costa Rica or to India or to Greece. So those are fun as well, of course.
I thought it was really neat to read that you were an architect for 25 years.
And, yeah.
You know, you did design work for high-end resorts and hotels and spas. Yeah. So sounds like you're the right person to ask for where to go on a wellness retreat.
Absolutely. And, in fact, you know, the long-term big-picture goal at the end of the day is to potentially develop these wellness resorts around the world, because that way I would be able to combine my background in hotel design, architecture, and development with my holistic health coaching and nutrition and create these resorts where people would come for a week, be immersed in this amazing, you know, plant-based organic food, you know, be drinking their sustainable organic wine and maybe some microbrew as long as it's organic and healthy, and just living the life for a week. And various different exercise activities they could do, Zumba to yoga to meditation, live the life for a week and be immersed in that, and then leave at the end of the week and hopefully feel inspired and empowered to continue that lifestyle. So that's the long-range goal, but in the short term for now, since we don't have a physical location, we're just playing around the world in all these various different incredible retreat locations and doing the same thing there, really. That's what our retreats are all about.
I understand that you're also associated with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine.
Yes. That's just last June, I was so excited. Whole Earth Wellness was accepted to become an educational alliance partner with Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine in Washington, D.C., which is an amazing nonprofit organization that, you know, you guys probably know about this. I don't need to plug them. All the 10,000 doctors that are, you know, standing behind preventative medicine through nutrition.
Right.
It's an amazing organization.
Yeah.
So now we're in an alliance partnership with them, which now allows me to start to teach these Food for Life classes that they provide to us. I'll start doing that probably January, February of 2014. We will do 6 to 8 week courses in the prevention and reversal of cancer, for example, the prevention and reversal of diabetes, women's health, children's health, all kinds of amazing things. So I'm going to really start to implement these live nutrition and cooking classes here in the Newport Beach office, which I'm very excited about. So that'll be starting soon.
So, Laura, what do you think is the best way to advocate for veganism?
Well, you know, I don't think that being a vegan is hard, but society really makes it so because it's so unusual. So I think what the best way to advocate for a vegan diet is just to introduce people to it hand to mouth, on the ground, you know, invite them over to your house for a potluck party. If they're not familiar with plant-based dishes, you can provide a recipe for them if they're interested. If they're not interested, just invite them anyway. Come on over, eat my food. Invite them over or take them out to one of these fabulous little vegan or vegetarian restaurants, hopefully, that are sprouting up all over the world. I think people need to taste it. I think once they taste it, then they know that this is something they can really get into. People mm-hmm. have these misconceptions about vegan food as being really boring and bland and bleh, you know, carrots and celery, but it's delicious. And so I think advocating by just feeding people is the best way. And then, of course, you know, that for me used to be the only way, but I have to say I'm becoming a bit more vocal in my animal advocacy as well. I'm becoming a lot more interested in participating in animal rights, you know, leafleting and going to the animal rights conference, for example, and really representing the reason behind this is not just health, but it's also uh-huh. the moral issue. It can't just be all about health because it needs to, people have to understand that moral component.
Can you tell our listeners about your website, please?
Yes, I'm really excited. We're going to be launching a brand new website probably in another, I want to say week, but just to be safe, I'm going to say next month. Right now, you can go to our website. It's www.wholeearthdiet.net. But that is our current website. But our new one is coming out, which is going to make it extremely user-friendly. You'll be able to go in there. There's a shopping cart where you can shop for our products and our services, shop for our wellness retreats. Everything is going to be very, very simple and easy to find, and it's really going to clearly spell out what it is that Whole Earth Wellness can offer to you or to your friends or to your family or anybody that you're interested in helping assist them towards this transition. I mean, for a lot of vegans, and there's probably a lot of vegans that listen to this radio program, they don't necessarily need my assistance, but maybe they know somebody that does. And sometimes they're not going to listen to you. Your best friend isn't going to listen to you. Your kid, your parent, you know. I mean, they're not. Yeah. They think you're crazy anyway. But send them to me, and I will gently hold their hand through the process and make them see that maybe Greg isn't as crazy as you thought he was.
Oh, yes, I am.
Well, okay, take that back.
Yeah, right. We've been talking with Laura Oatman, who's a certified health and nutrition counselor and founder of Whole Earth Wellness. Thanks for being with us on the show.
Thank you so much, guys. Mm-hmm.
If you'd like more information about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.